How important is the battle over the Supreme Court? Well, we're going to talk about that right now with best-selling author and speaker Bill Federer. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. Bill, welcome back to the program.
Jerry, great to be with you.
All right, so the question on the table, how important is the Supreme Court?
Well, it's tremendously important, and the problem is our country has shifted from Congress making the laws to the courts making the laws. The founders never intended this, but we've moved in this direction. And used to be the Supreme Court met in the basement of the White House. It wasn't until 1935 when Herbert Hoover, former president, becomes the Chief Justice. He moves it out of the basement and builds this nice, big, beautiful building across the street. And that's when the Supreme Court began to take on more of an independent role and then finally into making laws from the bench. And I just came out with a new book called Who is the King in America and Who are the Consulars to the King. It's an overview of 6,000 years of world history and how unique America's form of government is. Most governments, the law is the king's will. Louis XIV, the Sun King of France, he says, it is legal because I wish it. The pharaohs set the law. Hammurabi's code, he gets his law from his pagan god Marduk, and he's exempt from the law because it's his will going down the pyramid toward everybody. Ancient Israel is the first instance in world history of the leadership being limited by the law as well as by the people. And so there was no king for those first 400 years out of Egypt, and everyone was ruled by the law. Anyway, I document how America's founders did not like the king dictating their lives. And so when they got a chance, they broke away from the King of England, who, by the way, was the most powerful king the planet had ever seen. The British Empire included all of India, a quarter of the world's population right there, Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, British Guyana, Canada, and America. And when our founders got the chance, they flipped it and made the people the king. So a republic is where the people are king, ruling through their representatives. They're your messengers. They take your will and they go there and they carry it out. And so when we pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands, you're basically pledging allegiance to you being in charge. And so when somebody dishonors the flag, what they're in effect saying is, I don't want to be the king anymore. It's like, okay, somebody else is going to rule your life then. And so in America, it was this bottom-up form of government. And Lincoln said, the people are the rightful masters of both Congresses and courts. So I'm going to get into the details of it, but just think for a minute. Imagine a king sitting on his throne and saying, can somebody tell me what I'm supposed to do here? Hey, butler, come here. Cook, come here. What am I supposed to do? That wouldn't make any sense, would it? That's like the people in America saying to the politicians, what are we supposed to do? It's like, no, you're supposed to tell them what to do. But imagine the king going into a part of the castle, and the janitor says, King, you can't go in this part of the castle anymore. And the king looks at the janitor and says, well, who are you to tell me I can't do this? Oh, I'm the janitor. Well, where'd you come from? Well, I was appointed by the cook and the butler. Well, they're my servants. I hire them. They go, yeah, but you can't go in this part of the castle anymore. That's what a Supreme Court justice is, right? They're appointed by somebody that we hired called the president, and they're affirmed by people that we hire called senators, but it's the people's will. And so to get these justices saying, hey, no more marriage, man and woman anymore. Sorry, people. It's like, okay, the baby in the womb's no longer a person. You know, the preamble to the Constitution says to secure to ourselves and our posterity the blessings of freedom. I think posterity is the child in the womb. And so, but here we got these judges making laws from the bench. That's not what the founders intended. The founders intended that the people send their representatives to Congress and they carry their messages. They're the ones that pass laws reflecting the will of the people. The president is supposed to enforce the laws. He executes them, puts them into action. And then the judges are supposed to judge to make sure that what is carried out matches the will of those who wrote the law. Pretty simple. Except the people have allowed the power to be usurped out of their grasp because we've been sleeping and watching everything on TV and not paying attention to what's going on.
All right, so recently President Trump has nominated Neil Gorsuch from a court in Boulder, Colorado, or whatever, from Colorado, to be the next Supreme Court justice, Lord willing, and there will be certainly a big battle in the Senate over this. My big question, the fundamental question for the day, is how important is that battle? How important is it for Christians to try and make a difference in that?
Well, the battle is over whether there will be justices who will make decisions based on the will of the writers of the Constitution, or justices that are just pushing their agenda. A little background, and specifically in the new book that I wrote called Who is the King in America, I talk about religion. So prior to the Revolution, religion was under each colony. So every colony was started by a different denomination.
Christian.
Virginia was Anglican, Massachusetts was Puritan, Rhode Island was Baptist, New York was Dutch Reformed, Connecticut and New Hampshire were Congregationalists. You get the picture.
Mm-hmm.
After the Revolution, I read through every constitution. 9 of the original 13 constitutions required you to be a Christian Protestant in order to hold office. Only 3 allowed Catholics to hold office, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and New York. And one had 0 religious requirements, Rhode Island. They said that if you required someone to be a Christian, they could say they were just to get elected, and that would be hypocritical. Could you imagine a candidate saying they're Christian just to get elected? Anyway, so that was the past election. So we see that 3 things changed from religion being under state's jurisdiction. First, Irish potato famine. And around the early 1800s, the potato, there were these English laws imposed on Ireland that when somebody died, they had to divide their estate up amongst all their children. So these big landed estates kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller, till pretty soon all people had was potato patch. And that's what they grew. And when the famine came through and killed the potato, millions died and millions came across to America. The Catholic percentage mushrooms from 2% to 20% in a decade. Large anti-Catholic backlash, and a lot of laws got put on the books called Blaine Amendments, after James Blaine of Maine, to prevent any tax dollars from going to Catholic schools. Anyway, they didn't call them Catholic, they called them sectarian, but everybody knew it was code for anti-Catholic. But those laws get on the books, so that's point one that I wanted to make.
Okay.
Point two is the 14th Amendment. What's that? Republican Lincoln freed the slaves. Democrats pushed Jim Crow laws and black codes, which relegated the freed slaves to a second-class status. They helped form the KKK and everything. A Republican, John Bingham of Ohio, pushes through the 14th Amendment to force the states to give rights to these freed slaves. And somebody said, well, you know what? This is different than the first 10 amendments, which were handcuffs on the federal government placed by the states. This 14th Amendment is the federal government putting handcuffs on the states, telling them what to do.
Mm.
And John Bingham said, I repel the suggestion that the amendment will take away from any state any right that belongs to it. Well, no sooner did it pass than that's exactly what happened. So the first thing is the Irish potato famine and these anti-sectarian laws. Second is the 14th Amendment. But the third is where it gets interesting. Charles Darwin, 1859, published his Origin of Species, the theory that things could evolve. And so Herbert Spencer was the one who coined the term survival of the fittest. Herbert Spencer decided to try to apply evolution to academia, including law. And so Harvard law professor Christopher Columbus Langdell got bit by the bug, so to speak. He's in 1870. He's there as a law professor at Harvard, and he creates the case precedent theory of law. No other law school in the nation had this. Every other law school, you want to know what the law is, you go back and read the Constitution, you read Blackstone, you read John Locke, mm-hmm. you read Madison.
You care about the original intent of the founders. After this, you're saying they care about the precedents. So therefore, Roe v. Wade, which is based on, and this is an example, is based on a conception, Supreme Court decision from the 1960s, which said that there's a right to privacy. It wasn't built on what the founders said. It was built on previous Supreme Court decisions. It's almost like circular reasoning, but it's all based on evolution, is what you're saying.
Right, and I was amazed to find this quote from the book, The Justice of Beacon Hill, Life and Times of Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr. Who was he? He was a Harvard graduate that was put on the Supreme Court in 1902. And Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr. took this case precedent theory. He called it legal realism. And the biographer writes this. Holmes shook the little world of lawyers and judges who had been raised on Blackstone's theory that the law, given by God himself, was immutable, which means unchangeable, and eternal. And judges had only to discover its contents. Goes on, it took some years for them to come around to the view that the law was flexible, responsive to changing social and economic climates.
Yeah.
Holmes had broken new intellectual trails, demonstrating that the corpus or body of laws was neither ukase or an edict from God, nor derived from nature, but was a constantly evolving thing, a response to the continually developing social and economic environment. So here, he says, look, it's just evolving. Forget what the founder said. It didn't come from God. There's nothing special about laws. It's just, you just have it evolved. And so now we have two kinds of justices on the Supreme Court. The first group generally holds to the meaning that the writers of the Constitution intended.
Mm-hmm.
The second group could care less about the founders. They are just pushing an agenda. And that's what the battle is over, a Supreme Court justice being appointed. We got four and four. And so this new...
Can
this
I stop you? Can I stop you?
Way.
When you say four and four, one of those four on the conservative side is Anthony Kennedy. And clearly he doesn't fully embrace the Blackstone, you know, Founding Fathers Matter type of view of the law, does he?
Right. So if you can imagine a spectrum, you know, one side is the constitutionalists or textualists or a lot of different names. The other side are these evolutionary living constitution ones. And the different judges sort of fall anywhere along this spectrum.
Right.
Sort of a sliding scale. And but generally, there's these two main views. Try to make a decision that you can somehow tie back to the founders. And the others, what was the Lawrence case that Sandra Day O'Connor did where that legalized the homosexual, struck down homosexual laws?
Lawrence.
She didn't even go to the U.S. law precedent. She started quoting from laws from other countries.
Yeah, and in fact, it's interesting you mention her as an example because she voted for Lawrence, which was pro-sodomy, but about 15 years before that, I forget exactly how many years before, she had actually voted with the majority, a slight majority, in an anti-sodomy law. Do you remember that? The Bowers decision from the 1980s. So she herself changed in her own philosophy on that very issue. So it just is, it's talking about evolution or devolution, you know?
And now the founders...
We have about a minute to wrap up.
The founders understood that, yeah, there'll be things that need to be changed, and they're changed through the amendment process.
Yeah.
And so you maintain the government.
That's too arduous for the left. That's too arduous for the left. Let's be honest. They just want to amend the Constitution through Supreme Court decisions. You know, Roe v. Wade, bam, abortion on demand, all 9 months when you add to it Doe v. Bolton.
So there's an easy way and a hard way. So the way of changing it constitutionally through the amendment process is really long. You got to get your people elected. You got to get them to vote. You got to get 2/3 of the states to vote. There's a whole lot easier way to change laws. You just get an activist evolutionary judge to change the definitions of words that are in existing laws.
Exactly.
And you can slip it in through a court decision rather than having it reflect the will of the people.
Bill Federer, again, the name of that new book is what?
Who is the King in America?
All right, and AmericanMinute.com for more information. Bill, always a pleasure. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Jerry.
Short answer, the Supreme Court matters a great deal. God bless you now. All right, bye-bye.